the Day Zero update for October 1st, 2017. I'm Filippo D'Alfa.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Daniel Victoria.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
Shouldn't be no surprise what we're going to be talking about this week. Pretty much everybody has been opining and, making their views heard on the release of the SNES Classic.
Wait. You say SNES. I'm so disappointed.
He's been saying that.
I'm disappointed.
And we're off.
Whoa, listen.
Communists say that, Phil, and you live in Canada.
So we're a socialist country? What do you want?
Be that as it may, sir, I'm disappointed. SNES. SNES sounds like somebody sneezing in a fucked up manner. S-N-E-S.
No, that's too many syllables.
Oh, man.
It's all about efficiency, man.
Super NES works, too.
Yep,
yes, Super NES, awesome. Super Nintendo. SNES should be illegal.
Well, over in the UK, they say SNES, so...
For once, I'm going to agree with Lee here.
SNES is what the UK says.
Yeah.
Well, they're wrong, too. That's why we left the UK in 1776, because we knew this thing would happen with a Japanese company.
Yeah. So, okay. We're going to be talking about that, but before we get there, we should probably, catch up on what we've been doing this week. And me, I haven't had a whole lot of time to do much gaming this week. I've been playing some Pinball FX 3. I spent a good amount of time importing tables for the PS4 version. And then I actually got to play it a little bit, so that was kind of fun. I'm actually kind of liking what they did here. It's a pretty big improvement over, Zen Pinball 2 on the PS4 and FX2 on the Xbox One. It's just a more complete package, I would say. It's got a nice, looks nice, plays nice. There's a lot of tutorializing in there, which you can turn off if you don't want it. There's also table guides, which is really handy. So, if you want to learn what's on the tables, what shots do what, it's all there for you to learn and enjoy. And that whole, pseudo-RPG type thing actually seems to work pretty well. So, I'm enjoying it so far. So, that's been my week. But how about you, Pat?
Mostly NHL 18. Still just grinding away on the career mode, although I lost a pretty good chunk of my rookie season to a concussion this time. I had the puck in the attacking zone and decided to take a couple strides toward the goal. I'm not sure who the defenseman was that knocked me stupid, but I did not get back up, and I was out for 22 games.
Ow.
So that was a thing. And
that's NFL-level CTE crap right there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of simming through games that I wasn't in the lineup for.
Yeah.
But other than that, while I had the Xbox One hooked up, went for some Hydro Thunder Hurricane and Daytona USA, because those just never get old for me.
Yeah.
And then a little bit today especially, I've been throwing down some Ultra Street Fighter 2. The game is still hideously flawed, but there are still so many people out there that do not know how to fight Dalsim that I still get a good deal of enjoyment out of it. It does still need a patch in the worst way, but hopefully that's coming, because there is some potential here. And I don't want to write the game off as totaled just yet. So that's been my week.
All right, I guess I'm next.
Yep.
All right, so I finished East 8. That game goes in some weird directions in the last quarter.
Pretty weird, yeah.
Yes, it does. All of a sudden it starts talking about things like evolution, and then suddenly aliens appear, and it's just...
Yeah, like I said on Let's Weekend, I think that was the point where they started consuming the drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But so I finished East 8, and so right now my primary gaming is Cuphead, which I'm doing the review for. Yeah, it's good. It's really good. It's also hard as balls. it's basically... Well,
that's kind of the point, too, isn't it?
Yeah. It looks... Well, it looks just as good as you think it does, as the pictures and all the footage have shown. It is gorgeous. It is a 100%, pretty much 100% hand-animated. And
so, Brandon, I haven't really done much research on this game. I have played it at a few expos and stuff, but from what I've played out of the demos, it seemed to be a boss gauntlet. Is there any platforming at all involved?
Yes and no. Although the bosses do sort of make up a good majority of it, there are also regular platforming and shooting and puzzle levels as well.
Okay.
Basically, the way the game works is, so, like, the basic plot is that Cuphead and his friend Mugman, you know, they go to a casino and then basically forfeit their souls to the devil in a dice game. And so
that's like every weekend in Atlanta.
Yeah, basically. So in order to keep their souls, the devil basically says you have to go out and collect the soul contracts of all these others who have forfeited. And so that's sort of where where the boss stuff comes from. But in between then, you've got this overworld that you go through. You've got stores, you've got people you can talk to, and occasionally you'll come across like run and gun and shooting levels that where you can use to, you know, collect coins to go buy items and stuff and upgrade things. And those are hard as balls too. Because here's the thing. In Cuphead, you do not have any checkpoints and you do not have any health power-ups that you can get.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so if you die almost towards the end of a level, well, screw you, you're going to have to start back at the beginning. Now, as you gain money, you can go to the store and get more health points. So, like right now, I've got 4. Originally, I started out with 3. And the way that these boss fights work is that, well, you're basically every single one of them is unique in some different way, and all of them have different patterns, different attacks, different ways they go about you know, trying to kill you, basically. And they don't actually have health bars. Instead, what happens is every time they kill you, you're given a visual image of how close you are to actually killing them. And basically, it goes through phases, you know, because each boss basically will have phases that they go through. They'll, you know, transform or multiply or, you know, stuff like that. And it can go everywhere from like the most basic, like fighting one dude, to like getting into an airplane and having like a shooter level, to fighting these two giant frogs with boxing gloves, who then the big one swallows the little one and they turn into a slot machine. It's yeah.
Wait, what?
So expect the unexpected, basically. The whole game runs on old-timey cartoon logic. So, which is also just a great reminder that old, you know, 1920s, 1930s cartoons were, you know, 100% grade A nightmare fuel. So,
true enough.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is a lot of fun. And I do recommend it. So, look for the... And, yes, it, like I said, I'm not overdoing the difficulty here. It's not unfair. It never comes off as unfair. But it is hard.
Yeah.
So that's... expect the challenge.
Alright.
But that's what I've been doing. So what about you, Chris?
So I've been continuing my Destiny 2 play and just enjoying it some more and working towards some of the later end game content. I picked up Picross S. They finally released on the Switch a few days ago, and have been enjoying it a lot. There's a couple of things that aren't as good as the last release, Picross E7, which is they have this this thing that will put on your completed puzzles for like a no assist trophy, but you still have one assist on, which is the numbers that fade as you complete them. That is on, and you cannot turn it off like you could in the last release, which is a little bit disappointing. I would like to have no help, especially when you have a thing that says no assist, and it's like, no, that's clearly an assist. And just playing it only with a pro controller is not as much fun as playing the 3DS versions with the stylus. It kind of highlights that the D-pad on the pro controller is not as great as it should be. There's just a little bit of sloppiness that can happen when you're trying to be very precise with the things that you're marking. But other than that, it's really well done. They do a good job with some of these puzzles where that they kind of play with the negative space and sort of make that the focus of what you're marking down instead of just the specific item or whatever it is, which is nice when you're trying to sit there and guess what it is while you're playing it. But yeah, it's been pretty good so far. And I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. And also on the Switch, SteamWorld Dig 2. Still moving along in that. I finally got to kind of the second hub area with the what might be one of the last item unlocks with the hookshot, which lets you get across bigger gaps without without necessarily having to try to find alternate ways of getting some height, which has been pretty good so far. Makes it easier to sort of get to further distances more quickly instead of trying to figure out a way to maybe use the speed jump sort of thing. But yeah, that's been going good so far, and that's been mostly it. How about you, Dan Rip?
Not really all that much. I did have some time to get into the Project Octopath Traveler demo. So for those of you who haven't given it a try, there's two small quests to take part in. There's one female character and one male character. I'm doing the guys, and it's pretty straightforward stuff. You can pretty much fight anybody that you see like in the main town, and then you eventually have to go into a dungeon to save some kid. And the battles are random battles, and the battle system is actually pretty cool. It's kind of like Bravely Default in the sense that you can link combos together in such a way that it becomes strategic. And the beauty of it is really in discovering what weaknesses your enemies have. The main thing, though, is that I haven't actually finished it yet because the main boss, who I'm thinking is the end of the demo, keeps killing me, so I have to grind a little bit. But I'm really enjoying it. I heard that the female quest is actually a lot better and a little darker in some areas. So I'm looking forward to this game actually releasing. And honestly, if Square Enix wanted to go ahead and call this Final Fantasy 16, I wouldn't be mad about it. So, yeah. I've also been playing some Mario and Rabbids because that's pretty much been my main commute game. And I got my hands on a couple SNES classics, and I've been playing it at work and at home. So I've discussed it in previous episodes, but I never actually owned an SNES, so this actually allows me to go back and you know, have some fun. I did like beat games like FF6 on the Game Boy Advance, and I did play Super Mario RPG on emulators and stuff, but that's one game I actually was never able to finish, so I look forward to continuing on with this pretty awesome machine. So, yeah. What about you, Lee?
I did the SNES dance trying to find one. I had a pre-order and then Best Buy canceled it because I don't know why. And I was lucky. I was one of the people that was awake at like 1 o'clock in the morning when they originally went up. But I still completely disagree with how the hell they've handled this, but it seems to be better than what they've done with the NES Classic. So I'm hoping everybody can get some. But my main time with it, I toyed with a little bit of the games for, you know, each of them that were out. But the big thing that took my attention was Secret of Mana, because my son has been listening to, like, Retronauts and heard them talking about it and seen different stuff. And he's like, I think I'd really like to play this game. And so I was like, well, it's a good thing we have an SNES Classic coming. We'll definitely play it. So we went through the phase where, you know, you have to wait like the hour or so till you get your second person in. So we got there and we've just been playing that. We probably put about 4 hours into it the other day, which was just a lot of fun. And I forgot how cheap that game is. Like the first boss when you get your full crew is like this tiger, and he will like stun lock you. Like he hops to these ledges and he will stun lock you if you don't hit him with something long range. And so I was sitting there going, now I remember why, how like janky some of this game was, but it didn't matter. Like I still loved it. I loved it when I was a kid. I love it now. Just, and playing that stuff again is just insane. And, you know, as much as people revere the NES, I think the SNES was like, I think that cemented me as a gamer. Like I did everything with the NES, you know, I got my first one, did all that stuff, but I don't know, man. Like, I think if we had kept on with the 8-bit stuff, I probably would have stopped gaming when I was younger. But seeing the stuff that they came out with the SNES, you know, Super Mario World, which I still think is the best Mario game ever made. Final Fantasy III is on there, which is my favorite game of all time. Like, the funny part about it is as happy as I am with every one of the games that's on that system, it's remarkable how many more I still wish were on there. Like, the fact that ActRaiser isn't on there, the fact that America didn't get Legend of the Mystical Ninja, but the UK did. Yeah, it's crazy to me.
That chaps my ass.
Yeah, Final Fantasy II not being there. Chrono Trigger. Like, the fact that Chrono Trigger's not there is bananas. And there's so many games where you're like sitting back and looking at it and you go, well, this is missing, this is missing, this is missing. And even though that stuff is missing, it's still like, this still feels like a very complete package. Like, wow, I can't believe like the good stuff that's on the system. So I cannot wait till it's hacked and I'm going to load a whole bunch of stuff on it. And, yeah.
It's already hacked out of the box because under the hood it is exactly the same thing.
Yeah. I know, but they're doing it. From what I understand, I can't remember the name of the group that's doing it, but they have like a different package for the SNES because of how big the games are. Like, I think they're working on compression or some shit like that. But, okay. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to hacking that.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. Because like with the NES Classic, I mean, you could just load every NES ROM ever, and you still wouldn't run out of space. But yeah, that's not going to be the case here.
yeah, pick and choose here.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? That's okay. I mean, even like when you look at like the lineup for the NES, like, I mean, a good chunk of it was garbage. So, but it's just like, oh, I can load everything on here. That's awesome. So we're out to pick and choose a little bit with the SNES Classic. Well,
depending on how the compression goes, because the ROMs themselves are not that big.
Yeah. Well, and I've been reading, like, one guy was talking about how he loaded a bunch of stuff on his, and it's screwed with the replay feature because of the way the system actually – or the rewind feature – because the way the system actually caches that information. So I think that's going to be the other part of it, is that depending on what you do, you know, kind of how much, or even if that feature will work for you. Of course, I don't really care about that. I haven't used it, but I could see my son being like, this is something I'd like to use. So, because again, like when you think about like how cheap Secret of Mana is, a goddamn tiger stun locked and killed two of our guys. We couldn't do shit. Like, he just lit them on fire and then kept lighting them on fire. Like, we didn't even have a chance. So, I could totally see if you were playing against the computer in Street Fighter, like, all right, Bison, you cheese me out again, you son of a bitch. Time to rewind. So, but yeah, so I've been doing that. And my wife got me back into playing WoW. Which I think it's about that time anyway. They brought out new content and all that stuff. And there's some, I don't know what it is. Like, you got, any of you guys ever have like games where it feels like there's a certain season to play those games? Like, I know when I was younger, it felt like RPGs were for like summertime and Christmas. WoW has always felt like something that I play in the fall and the winter because, you know, it gets too cold. I want to go outside and do all that stuff. And that's typically when all the new shit comes out for it anyway. So we've been getting back into it and playing stuff with our guild. And, yeah, I've been doing that and still trying to finish Dragon Quest V. I kind of grind that whenever, and I'm just trying to collect monsters before I finish the game. I have no idea why because it's not like I'm going to go back afterwards. But, yeah, so that's what I've been doing. I think I'm going to refrain from – from the fuck Nintendo game. I'll save that for next week. If they botch getting more of these things in people's hands. So
with that in mind, we should probably get into
it. I mean, you got one, so.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I got one, but it's like, I just, so, and I'll just say this one thing and we can move on. I'm still utterly blown away by people's inability to call out Nintendo on their shit. I'm utterly blown away by the amount of people that I've talked to on forums and in person who don't realize that Nintendo has always used artificial scarcity. They're like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Why wouldn't they want to blah, blah, blah? And it sometimes it feels like I'm talking to a fucking monkey. You know, like, there's historical precedence for this. Anybody that's ever worked in marketing or knows anything about marketing knows how this works. And so it's kind of like – it's one of those things that gets on my nerve because I feel like so many people give Nintendo a pass because they're Nintendo and have not – like, I mean, I've been around. I've been buying – I had their stuff since, was it, 85? Like, I watched them do this throughout the entire time that I've been a gamer. You know, like, where they just – and the reason that they do it, like, the thing that always kills me that people don't understand is the reason that they do it is because it gives them favorable terms with retailers. They don't have to worry about stock sitting on the shelf. They don't have to worry about anything being refunded or anything else like that. Because, like, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen it. Every couple of months, a whole chunk of refurbished, air quotes, Wii U's go on sale on their website for $200. Those are units they got sent back to Nintendo because the retailers couldn't sell them. And that was the first time Nintendo's had to deal with something like that, as far as I know, ever. And because previously they've always done the artificial scarcity stuff. They've done it with games. They've done it with systems. And I think the only real exception to that was the Wii because they simply could not make enough. But, you know, we've seen it with the Switch where there's – They have been conservative to a point where they have not been able to serve their customer base. And they that was sort of the – we saw the zenith of that with the NES Classic. So, you know, there's no telling. You know, they might have garnered the goodwill from all the people that they pissed off this time around. But, you know, maybe there won't be anything else coming out after this next shipment or two. We just don't know. And I'm always shocked at people's willingness to give them a pass when they have done this to every segment of the gaming community at some point. And people are like, no, they didn't. What fucking planet do you people live on? So, I mean, there's books written about this shit. Like, anyway. So, yeah. So I just like – and, you know, it doesn't help that the retailers too. Like, you guys heard Amazon was selling these things on their treasure trucks, but they didn't fill any of their pre-orders.
That's complete horseshit. Oh, my God.
I know. You believe that shit?
Yeah.
So, but you know, you have the hot thing, and that's the thing. These people that are buying for retail space or market share in people's minds, this stuff matters to them. Having a hot product matters. And when you look on the forums, there are people that – Dan Reb, you bought a couple of them, right?
I did.
There are a bunch of people now, like, that's the other part of this that's so insidious in a way, is that there are people that bought three or four of these fucking things because they weren't sure they were going to get one.
That's exactly what I did.
You know, exactly. Like, and just that idea in and of itself is fucking insane to me. But, you know, and Nintendo is laughing all the way to the bank, so before they might have been able to get $80 out of somebody like Dan Reb. But, you know, now they might have gotten 160 or 240 or whatever the case may be. And then people are just going to – it's going to be the same thing that happened with the Switch. I know a bunch of people that bought Switches didn't even want them. They were just like, well, it's fucking rare. I mean, what if I do want it 6 months down the line and I can't find one? You know, it's the same thing. That's why artificial scarcity works, because you essentially get people to buy things that they would have thought about buying otherwise just because, oh, shit, they see it in the store. And there are still people out there that are just willingly like, nah, that don't make no sense to me. Why would they do that? Well, you're an idiot. So,
that's pretty much it. Anyway. Yeah. So I guess that kind of dovetails pretty effectively into the whole SNES Classic.
SNES, Phil. Jesus!
No, it's SNES. That's how that's going to work.
That's why we won't let you in
Here
our country.
Go.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
So, okay. It came out on Friday. I think more people were actually able to get it than the NES Classic, so it wasn't a complete dumpster fire or a train wreck. It was more like a car crash. So,
This release was definitely a lot smoother.
Yeah.
It wasn't nearly as, you know, they did get put, their supplies were greater, but they still went about it in a really ass backwards way. So,
you can't let them off the hook for the way pre-orders were handled or anything else like that. And I think what's interesting too about this whole thing happening is I think from what I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, a bunch of retailers are simply not going to do online orders for this anymore. They're making it, you know, you show up and you buy this thing. The Best Buy rep at the store that I went to told me after the initial wave that they did, because of how much trouble it was, that they're not going to be doing any more online orders. You have to go get it from a store. You're not going to be able to get it on the website because they were having bots hammer their website and crashing it.
Yeah.
From what I hear, Target is the same way. I would imagine GameStop is probably – well, maybe not GameStop. I think ThinkGeek and them, which is part of GameStop, will probably still do those bundles where there's like $250 worth of shit.
That you don't want.
That you don't want to get the $80 thing that you do. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I hope that that's the case. I hope it's the retailers kind of pushing back and being like, you know, because I'm sure everybody on the show has worked retail at least once. I mean, there's nothing – there's very few things that are shittier than constantly having your department or whatever blown up because you don't have something that another company is refusing to produce the proper numbers of. Like, I dealt with that when I was selling phones, and I dealt with that when I worked at, you know, different places. I know, Pat, you dealt with that at Walmart. Like, I can imagine, especially at a place like Walmart, getting a call every 30 goddamn seconds. Like, you got the SNES? You got to get one? You go, how many are you going to get? Where is it at? Is it in the back? I'll go get it. You know, like that kind of attitude, and you have to dedicate somebody full time to just answering the fucking phone and saying, no, we don't have it. No, we're not going to have it, like that kind of thing. So I hope that if these companies are doing it where it's first come, first serve, that's sort of in relation to Nintendo, you know, essentially not giving them even what numbers they should even expect. Because Nintendo also has a history of under-delivering consoles. If somebody would ask for 200, they'd give them 150. You know, just because they're worried about whatever. So, so I'm wondering if that's the case too, or like I say, with the guy at Best Buy, again, it's anecdotal. But he was a district manager. He told me that the reason they weren't doing this is because bots were crashing just like constantly whenever they go up.
Yeah.
So there's truth to that. I can attest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think across the board, more people had luck going brick and mortar than they did online. I mean, if you did it online, it's a complete waste of time. You're staying up later than you have to.
And you're pressing
refresh, and then you put it in your cart, it's not there anymore, all that bullshit. Whereas, you know, I actually woke up to do what I had to do, and I left satisfied. So,
well, I think, too, when you look at that, it's also about a customer satisfaction. Like, I mean, there's nothing more frustrating if you're trying to buy something, putting that motherfucker in your cart, and then it's not there when you go to put in your credit card information. Like, that wouldn't happen if you're in line at a store. They would just take it out of your hand and go, oh, well, you didn't have your credit card ready? Get the fuck out. Like, you know, they wouldn't do that at all. So, like, I think that's part of it, too.
And it just makes sense. Friday.
Yeah. Well, I did just like Danreb did. Like, I had one pre-ordered, but a friend of mine wanted to pick one up and is having to deal with a situation with her father. So she wasn't going to go sit in line or do anything else like that. So when I went to pick up mine from Best Buy, they had a line outside. And they were opening at 10, and I got there at 9:50, and I was like the 51st or 52nd person. And so I managed to pick up a second, and I've already sent that out. But you know, the other thing was crazy. I'll never forget this either. Is so, like, there were a bunch of Best Buy employees in line to get this thing. Which I appreciate the fact because it is great. Because the Target across the street had, like, I don't know if any of you guys ever used BrickSeek or something like that.
Yeah.
But fine shit. But yeah, the Target across the street from the Best Buy had 7 units saleable, and there were 7 employees in the electronics section. And I'm like, yo, you got one of these? He's like, this is before, because I didn't want to wait in line at Best Buy. Do you have one of these? The guy's like, no. I said, well, that's not true. There's six of these. There's seven of these on Brixie. And the guy just turned white. And it was like, so you guys are actually saving for yourselves, right? Is that what's going on? And he's like, we're not allowed to do that, sir. Like, yeah, sure you're not, pal. All right. Throw across. Yeah. You got my full buddy.
So. You know, the one thing I don't get with the allocation is that, you know, between Best Buy, Target, GameStop, GameStop had the least. To me, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just about the retailers being able to handle that amount of profit. I couldn't speculate on that. Maybe GameStop wanted or again, retailers pushing back. Maybe Nintendo pushed back on them and was like, you can't keep selling our shit in these stupid-ass fucking bundles. But that doesn't make sense. They let them do that with everything else, but... dude, there was a family. There was a Chinese family that rolled 13 deep and got 13.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, wow.
Yeah.
So, I hope our
story entirely.
I hope there truly is enough in the sales channel that the scalpers don't get anything.
Yeah.
So
the ideal would be like they take a $20 loss per unit or something.
Yeah. From what I'm seeing, like, people are still, you know, selling and buying at large prices, but I haven't seen any of those fucking pyramids that they show on the eBay. So
I actually had a friend of mine do it, and he got cussed out by like four people because he was like trying to brag, and then he was like, "Yeah, I already sold all of them." Da 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 da. It's like, all right, man, this is only because you don't want to get a fucking job. So.
So everybody, every one of us actually did try to get it, and it looks like only two of us actually were successful. So, yeah, 33% success rate so far. Hopefully that rises as time goes by.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, all indications point to shipments being made throughout the week and just throughout its lifespan. But if anything, I'll send you one if one of the pre-orders goes through. So, yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if we get like another shipment now, and then there's a drought, and then they come back on Black Friday, and then there's another drought, and then the week before Christmas, all of a sudden they're available everywhere. So it's like last minute shopping. We just sent a whole bunch more in the sales channel.
That'd be nice.
So the cool thing here is that Reggie didn't lie.
Well, yeah. We don't know that yet.
We'll revisit this after New Year's.
Yeah.
As of right now, he didn't lie.
Reggie is, man, listen. Reggie is so full of shit, that's the reason his eyes are brown. Okay? That guy is so full of shit.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway.
On the upside, though, it does look like the SNES Classic will be just as hackable as the NES Classic.
SNES, Phil.
SNES,
basically
Jesus
just
Christ.
The same thing. Nope. You know what? I'm just going to refer to it as SNES for the entirety of the show just to annoy you motherfuckers.
This is like nails on chalkboard.
Yeah, so it's basically the exact same hardware inside. The improvements are pretty much just in the software.
There's still no reset on the fucking thing, though. You still gotta hit the button, right? Unless there's something that nobody told me about.
Yeah, there's a reset shortcut. You can't do it with the SNES controllers. Of course you can't. There's not enough buttons.
Expect that.
Yeah, but if you have a Pro controller for a Switch, that will work. Or a Pro controller
what
Wii U.
What the fuck?
There's no code or anything? What the fuck? Okay,
One of the hacks.
It's the Nintendo gun of Nintendo. Like, you're going to get the fuck up and hit this little reset button, you son of a bitch.
One of the hacks for the NES Classic actually adds a reset shortcut.
So. Yeah, like the 8-bit do or 8-bit do, they have a shortcut on their wireless controllers. But and also for anybody that does get one, there's a bunch on Amazon. I'll see if I can find a link so we can put it with the show notes. But I bought controller extension cables because the cables themselves are only 5 feet long. So I would highly suggest that. Apparently, you can hook a Wii remote up to the system and then plug the SNES controller into the Wiimote. But who the fuck wants to do that?
It sounds like Switch voice chat. No thanks.
Yeah, Nintendo's really a big fan of plugging things into other things.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
It doesn't make any goddamn sense either. Gizmosex. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
It's penetrating everywhere.
Yeah. Pretty sure the Switch would be more than capable of handling, you know, voice chat on its own.
Yeah. Well, you heard the newest thing is that they finally set it up to where, like, if you switch in something in the app, it won't disconnect you. Like, oh, that's progress. 2008, baby, we made it.
Background processes, yeah. Jesus. So,
yeah. Nintendo just fucking flabbergasted me on that sense. And that's what makes so much of this so frustrating, like, even with, like, the SNES Classic, because that's what it's called. It playing it has been so just fun. Like, just and the stuff, like, the even on a big screen, like, I use the CRT filter. Everything looks great. You know, I have noticed a couple of issues, but they seem minor. Like, I've noticed some voice channels dropping and things like that. Like, I don't think the emulation is 100% spot on. I know there are instances in Yoshi's Island where, like, the background drops. But I think it's few and far between. Like, some of it just seems to be really hit or miss depending on the ROM. But I'm very interested in hacking it, just, you know, in the future because of ROM hacks. Like, there's one out there that has the Final Fantasy VI script from the GBA back into Final Fantasy III. There's one that completely changes the way Final Fantasy III works, adds a hard mode and all that shit. I want to put, like, the old Dragon Quest remakes on there. I have translated Dragon Quest 4, 5, and 6. Oh, like, man. I can't wait to do that, because I know, and like, the thing is, I have some of these on my DS.
But did you see the Breath of Fire 2 remaster?
I did. That's on there too. I want to get Seiken Densetsu 3 so I can play that with my kid. Like, I'm really looking forward to hacking it just to put that stuff on there, because even though I can play a lot of this stuff in a portable mode in some way, whether it's on my Vita or my PSP or whatever, there is still something I really like about playing these games on the big screen. And the CRT filter looks fantastic. So. But you gotta hit that fucking reset button.
Yeah, you do have to do that.
And then, of course, we need to mention what was the of all those games, what was sort of the one big attraction?
Oh yeah, clearly, well, the crown jewel of that was Star Fox 2, the final complete edition of it.
Complete, actual, you know, put together.
It runs like shit.
Well, it always did run like shit.
I forgot how shitty Star Fox ran. Like, I was playing with my kid, and I was, like, trying to explain it to him. Like, you have no idea how revolutionary this was at the time. 16-bit system doing this.
10 frames per second.
Yeah. Do you know how serious this is? Look at this. There's no fucking crosshair. There's nothing. It's awesome. And he's like, yeah, all right, Dad.
Oh, my God. You know what, I went to Star Fox not knowing there wasn't the crosshair, and I was like, oh my god. And I ended up dying in the first level. I was like, holy shit, I fucking suck.
It's really disorienting. Like, that is something, if we should ROM hack a crosshair into that motherfucker.
Well, the crosshair is in Star Fox 2, along with a fully complete translation and pretty much most of the bugs.
Wasn't the reason that's, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I can swear, I think I heard this on Retronauts, the reason that they didn't release Star Fox 2 was because at the time, like, I believe it was the PlayStation had come out, and they didn't want, and the Saturn had as well, and they didn't want the 3D that the Super Nintendo could produce to be compared to that of the other systems that are out at the time, and they were like, we just need to scrap this because we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot. We have the Nintendo 64 coming out, which is obviously much more capable.
And they thought that's the exact reason. That's a stupid fucking reason as well.
Well, no, they thought it was
because here's the thing. When you do play Star Fox 2 one, and you get a ways into it, the very first thing you're going to realize is, holy shit, this is just like a primitive version of Star Fox 64 because they basically took a lot of the ideas that they first did in Star Fox 2 and transplanted them over to Star Fox 64.
Yeah.
Everything from the sort of the free roaming planets, the different types of vehicles you can use.
Yeah.
It's all from Star Fox 2. The only thing they didn't use was the transforming the R-Wing into a walking vehicle. They didn't do that until Star Fox Zero. But yeah, so that's pretty much the reason why we never got Star Fox 2 as an official release until now.
Yeah.
Well, and that's interesting because one of the things that I read too is that I think it was Miyamoto that said it, is one of the things that they really looked at Star Fox as when they first started it was essentially a testing bed. Like we want to see what we could do with essentially these characters and these ideas, where we could kind of make them whatever we wanted to make them. So that's why you see such a variance in the Star Fox games that are out there, just because that's how Nintendo looks at them. It's like we're gonna play with this and come up with just some off the wall concepts, and this will be the franchise that we use to do it.
Hmm. Yeah. And it was also the fact that Star Fox 2 would have come out in 1995, which was pretty much getting towards the end of the SNES's life cycle anyway. And so,
God damn it, Phil.
It is also, if you play it, you will notice how the standards have changed as far as games are concerned, because Star Fox 2 is actually kind of short. Now, by the standards of around the time it was coming out for that type of game, it's about normal, its length. It's not too long, not too short. But now we live in the era of huge multi 20-40 hour action RPGs, online play, all this stuff that keeps games, their playing value well after its life cycle.
Right.
But, Star Fox 2 is sort of a child of an era when, gaming was, there weren't really extensive save options. Gaming was basically you, maybe another friend, in front of a SNES, in front of a television.
Hmm.
It's a different era. And that's the reason I'm saying that is because I've seen a lot of people, sort of the reviews of professional reviewers for Star Fox 2, and I think that they're making the mistake of sort of comparing sort of what Star Fox 2 would have been like in the era it was released to the modern era.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of fair.
I don't think is really fair to
I would agree.
Star Fox 2 itself. That's not to say that Star Fox 2 doesn't have its, have some problems, because of course it does. Yeah. But,
That's what I try to explain to my kid. Like, you have to understand the context of this. And it's ironic that I could explain that to a child and he gets it and a professional reviewer does not.
Yeah.
Put, big air quotes in front of the word professional.
That seems shaky.
Yeah. Yep. You also have to remember, like you guys said, Star Fox on the SNES always ran shitty.
Yeah, well, because
that's just the technology was at the time.
Yeah,
they had to run the hardware inside the cartridge just to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not part of the
floor plan. It wasn't just Star Fox 2. I mean, all of those sort of highly polygonal 3D games on the SNES ran that way.
Hmm.
Yeah, there was the arcade racer. What the fuck was it?
Stunt Race FX.
Stunt Race FX. Yes, you had that. And then there were a handful of titles that really took advantage of the Super FX chip. I mean, even Yoshi's Island too did.
Pilot Wings was also one of those games, wasn't it?
No, it was on Mode 7.
It didn't even exist until Star Fox.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting to me when I look at it through the lens of playing it with my kid is that you can see it. You can, at least in my opinion, you can see a very, I think, substantial jump when Nintendo started playing with those chips again, which, if you follow Nintendo's history, so many of their games were augmented by chips of different types that gave more sound channels, gave more graphical fidelity and things like that. And the Super FX chip was kind of like, this is how Nintendo operates, rolled into a chip to a certain extent. And some of the stuff that they were able to pull off was really impressive at the time, and I think it's still really impressive to this day. Like, some of the effects and just really particularly the beauty of Yoshi's Island is really kind of breathtaking. I remember at the time I didn't really appreciate it because it felt very kiddie, and I went back and played it later, and it's remarkable how tight that game is. But not just that, like how much the scenery serves the game. Which I feel like Nintendo has never actually been very strong with. I feel like, you know, like one of the things that I've had conversations with my son about was, is, you know, a lot of these stories and things like that don't make a lot of sense because they're making up the story after they've determined what the gameplay loop is going to be. Yeah. And Yoshi's Island feels very different in that sense, in that it feels like so much of it is extremely cohesive with the story that they were trying to tell, even though it's not really much of one, and also with the world that it exists in. It's very, you know, dreamlike and childlike, which makes sense because you're carrying a baby around and you're a dinosaur. Maybe the dinosaur part doesn't make that much sense, but you know what I mean. But like that, it feels aesthetically like a game that is wholly unique. And I think really takes advantage and tries to do something really different with the graphics. Whereas I feel like no Mario game before or really since has tried to do a look that was that distinct. I mean, I think you have the genericness of the new Super Mario Brothers games. I think really the only thing that's come close to really having something that was, and even then it still varies quite a bit, is Super Mario Galaxy. I felt was the only real title after that one that was like, let's do something that is really insane and you haven't seen us do with kind of what we have on hand.
Yeah, it was Yoshi's Island that made me not really like the look of Super Mario 64, because it's like, we went from this game that looks fucking amazing on the Super Nintendo to this game is just kind of bland with not really much in the way of good-looking textures or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with what Lee was saying to a certain extent about the Mario visual style. Like, if you go back to the older years with the NES and the SNES, even though we had a lot of direct sequels, they all felt different mainly because of the visual style. Obviously, the first Mario Brothers is iconic in its own right. I'm not going to talk about the second one because it's not a Mario game to begin with. And then Mario Brothers 3 was a stage play. And then you have Super Mario World with the dino stuff. And then what you had with Yoshi's Island. And, like, nowadays, ever since they gave Mario the Mamma Mia voice, it feels like he's pretty much been generic. You look at games like Mario 64, Mario and Rabbids, even Mario Sunshine. They all have that same version of Mario. And as much as I love the series, I wouldn't say that it's really bogging it down, but it just all feels generic.
Like, yeah, you even look at plastic.
Exactly. You look at Super Mario 3D World and you look at Super Mario Galaxy. They're both very different, but the Mario there just feels totally the same. So I don't know whether Odyssey will feel different with all the different costumes, but he still looks like the same Mario to me, and it just doesn't feel like they're really doing much with the actual visual style. And then you look at a game like Zelda where they change it every single time, and that's one of the reasons why it's kept its charm. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the legacy. If we were going to talk about anything for that, I think the legacy of the Super NES, at least in my mind, is what it left behind as far as, like, the NES was essentially, like, if we were looking at this in terms of like a metaphor for a house, like the NES was like kind of like the outline. Like, here's some of the ideas that we can do. And then the Super Nintendo was like the fully realized house here. And I felt like at the time, particularly, you had a lot of developers and creators that, because of the technology that they were given access to, could do things that we had never seen before. And I think Nintendo in particular iterated on that so much so in their creative process. And I don't think they have been as creative since. And I think that's one, and not just them, the third parties as well. I think when you look at, I mean, my God, Square back then, 16-bit Nintendo is what gave us 32-bit Square. Like, if we had not had them lay the groundwork with Chrono Trigger, with the Final Fantasies that had come out, and just the random stuff that they played with, Secret of Mana, the Saga games, we wouldn't have had all of the cool shit, and I think the essentially an RPG renaissance in the 32-bit era if they hadn't gotten their feet underneath them in the 16-bit era and really started trying things. Like, even Final Fantasy, like Final Fantasy VI is my favorite game of all time, simply because, and I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't played it, but the game zigs when I was expecting it to zag, and it does that consistently throughout the entire narrative, and it just blew me away. And I, to me, that is the legacy of the Super Nintendo, is so many new things being tried. And I think we saw some of that to an extent in the 32-bit era, But I don't think we've ever seen, at least in my opinion, a certain outpouring of creativity, at least with a good chunk of those people that were making games. Because, I mean, look at the stuff that we had. When you look at any of these games that are out there, you can look at the breadth of the RPGs, which I think is only eclipsed by the stuff in the 32-bit generation. I can't think of many platformers that are better than Super Mario World or Yoshi's Island. And the only thing that you don't really have is something like a Mario 64 or an Ocarina of Time, because those weren't really doable with the technology. But I would fight someone, and probably violently hurt them if people would tell me to my face that Ocarina of Time is better than A Link to the Past.
Yes.
because A Link to the Past is – Ocarina of Time is A Link to the Past in 3D form and less charming for it.
Yep. And you got Link running around the screen like a Mario brother.
Yeah, exactly. It's just – it's kind of crazy. And, you know, there's just so much about that era that – it, to me, in a lot of ways, it encompasses gaming. Like, I talk a lot, like when I talk to my son and even when I've been on the show with you guys, about like sort of the language of gaming. And the NES was kind of started the blueprint. And I think that the SNES provided the full dialogue for everybody and was the blueprint for so many games going forward. And it's especially been a treat for me to watch my son see some of that now, because he's not like some of his friends. Like, his friends are all about, like, I want to play Call of Duty, I want to do this, I want to do that. Like, my son has no problem going back and playing old stuff, and he's even playing newer stuff like Stardew Valley and things like that. But he seems to love all of it, and he recognizes some of the language of it. And I think if we didn't have a Super Nintendo, I think we would be in a much different place gaming-wise. Awesome to have this reminder of it and to have it be available to people, and hopefully a lot more people can get a hold of it.
Yeah, and while I do agree that the Super NES was
God damn it, Phil,
was Nintendo at their best.
Super NES
setting.
Oh, that's
he's training it up on us.
setting the trend for what would come in the future. I think that creativity is still there at Nintendo. It's just not being applied to their standard IPs anymore.
Yeah, they're I think they're a different company now too.
Yeah. No. You know, we got Splatoon recently, yeah, which is, you know, just bananas and awesome. ARMS turned out way better than anybody was ever even expecting, and now we're seeing the same kind of thing with Mario and Rabbids. You know, that wouldn't have ever happened 10 years ago. So
I hope Switch Nintendo is a return to form of like Super NES Nintendo. I think that, and I think they are uniquely positioned now more than they ever have been before. To kind of recapture some of that, because if anything, when you look at the technology of the Super Nintendo, like in comparison to the Genesis, right? Like, we all remember the whole blast processing thing. The reason that Sega could say that they had blast processing was because their chip ran twice the speed of the SNES. The Super Nintendo, I may be wrong on this part, but the Super Nintendo either ran at 3.2 megahertz or 3.4 megahertz.
Yeah, where 3. The Genesis 5 ran,
3.5. Okay. Yeah. And the Genesis ran in the sevens. But and then, you know, you had differences. Like, the Super Nintendo could do far more colors than the Genesis could, you know. So there were trade-offs in terms of the tech. But I think when you're looking at anything as a creative person, I think you can create a lot of beautiful things out of limitations. And I think that's one of the reasons when we look at a lot of the current gen stuff, why even if they can make graphics as photorealistic as they want to or anything else like that, I feel like that's also part of the reason why so much of it is soulless. Because there's not – so many games nowadays feel like they're done with the checkbox. Like, oh, well, we did this, and now we have this online multiplayer, and now we have these collectibles, and check.
Yeah.
Litmus test development.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when your hardware is limiting to a certain extent, you can't do that. You really have to make hard choices about what you can and can't cut. And you can actually look at Secret of Mana as a case study of that, because that was supposed to be on the SNES CD, and you know there are chunks of that game that were removed because of memory limitations. So, and I feel like Nintendo's gotten back to that place. Like, you know, we talked a lot on this show about the arms race that they would do and getting in. Like, I still feel like they need to compete on a technology level with Sony and Microsoft, but the form factor that they've chosen now, I think, can really especially play on their strengths. Because, like, when you're playing something like Mario versus Rabbids, nobody's sitting there going, well, this would be so much better if there was ambient occlusion or whatever the fuck. How are you pronouncing that shit? Yeah, or occlusion, sorry. This would be so much better if there's a lot more ambient occlusion. And what about this? And, like, this tessellation that's happening, like, you're not worried about that stuff. And, you know, I think hopefully where Nintendo is being placed, and I think producing this product, I really hope it reminds them of why gamers love them in the first place. And if people can't get a hold of SNES Classic, I hope that this is an example of what we can expect from Nintendo for Virtual Console in whatever form that it takes.
Yeah. All right. So before we get off of the Super Nintendo Entertainment System Classic Edition, I want to circle back to... I want to circle back to Star Fox 2
a
little
bit. That was actually the best
thing you said. That was amazing, Phil. I appreciate you trying to encompass everyone and what they need on that. Nicely done.
It's what I do. I do want to circle back to Star Fox 2 just for a bit. And the fact that there's a very interesting hack as far as the original Star Fox goes. In that this might actually be possible on the Super NES Classic Edition. At some point.
Motherfucker.
So, yeah, there is a hack that somebody did, which was basically a ROM swap of a Star Fox 1 onto a Super FX 2 chip. So, yeah, that would give you a much better frame rate on the original Star Fox. And since Super NES Classic Edition is emulating both of those chips... it actually might be possible to re-tag Star Fox 1's ROM to use the Super FX 2 and probably get that better frame rate.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, that's...
I wonder if there's a way they can link the ROM to get you to pronounce Super NES properly.
Jesus Christ.
Anyways. So, we'll move on to...
Wait. One last thing. And this is I know you guys, some of y'all don't have this. It has a poster in the system. Like, and it's designed like old school, like the shit that used to come out of the game cartridges, like with
the
hard lines and all that. And it's just, you know, now you're playing with power, superpower. I'm hanging that motherfucker up. It's so nice. It's unbelievable, but it's like, now you're.
I totally want one of those on my wall. I'm serious.
Fantastic.
Yeah. All right.
One thing I want to quickly mention, the packaging is the exact same size as the packaging with the NES Classic, and it follows the exact same uniform template. If you look at the top of the box, it has the controller, and it says Classics, not Classic, Classics. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, they're totally going to do N64 next year. It's
inevitable. It's going to be crazy, because how are they going to recreate that controller? And stick it in that box and keep that phone.
Well, the box is going to have to be bigger because the controller itself is bigger than the damn box.
Exactly. So yeah. I want to see a Game Boy or like a GBA Classic, which is ironic because I have a working GBA on my desk.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay, so moving away from the Super NES Classic.
Fuck.
Nintendo did make one. What? I just pronounced it properly.
Oh my god.
Shut up.
Stop pronouncing.
So Nintendo did one other thing this week. They basically disallowed live streaming of Nintendo content for people using their partner program on YouTube.
I'm a big fan of how we sit here. We sat here gushing about Nintendo for like 25 minutes, and now we're jumping right back into what the fuck's Nintendo?
Yeah, and not just, you know, streaming for monetization, for even not monetized. You cannot stream Nintendo stuff on YouTube at all.
That's what Twitch is for.
I suppose that's they're going to, you know, crack down on that too. What they say is, if you want to stream Nintendo stuff, use a different account.
Wow.
So this happens right after the SNES Classic launches, and I don't think the timing is coincidental.
No.
Oh.
Really, really. Especially given how many of those games on the system are RPGs.
Yeah. Well, I think we should take one of these shows one of these days to actually talk about like streaming and how much control some of these companies should have about what you can or cannot do. Like, nobody would come into my house and tell me that I couldn't fucking let my friends watch a movie. Yeah. You know, like Warner Brothers wouldn't be up in here like, you want to watch Blade Runner with your wife? Fuck you! Like, they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna tell me I can't do that. But I do sometimes wonder about this stuff when we think about streaming, and I think that would be a good topic for a later date, because companies like Nintendo don't seem to get it and why it's even important. You know,
I'm just surprised.
It'll be totally fun watching live streams for the Nintendo World Championships and seeing those get taken down.
Yeah, Nintendo's own.
They'll do their own. Take it down.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I want to watch some tool bags. Yeah,
Nintendo just doesn't get it sometimes, and well, just leaves us pondering what the hell is going on over there in Kyoto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say this earlier, but I think Nintendo is a not really as a business, or maybe as a business, that and a development house. Like, they're at a similar spot to where a lot of the older anime houses are, where like. You know, we have a lot of great young up-and-coming talent, but because these businesses are so Japanese, they just won't give them the pen. So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, all right, so we'll move on to other Nintendo news, and that's the first release, Arcade Archives Mario Brothers came out on the Switch this week. It was $8, and people had a shit fit for some reason.
Maybe because this isn't what they wanted?
I don't know. They didn't. Well, obviously, people wanted a virtual console, and instead, they're getting,
I mean, people paid $40 for Street Fighter.
Yeah, for some reason.
That's the same price that all of the Arcade Archives games have been.
Yeah.
Since they started on the PS4 a few years ago.
Hmm.
And also, Nintendo's not making any of these.
No.
It's all hamster. So, it's not like Nintendo's doing much work other than handing them the ROMs.
Yeah, and the license. You know. So, I don't know. It just makes me wonder, like, what is the right price for these kinds of, you know, one-off arcade
Free with games? Ads.
Huh? Free with ads. No, let's not do that.
Microtransactions. We want all that.
Got enough of that.
Pay us for lives. Every time you hit a turtle, you watch an ad.
Oh, my God.
Well, you get 500 points for every ad you watch.
You know, now that I think about it, the whole freemium model would actually probably work inside of something like Super Mario Brothers, in that you're collecting coins the entire time. You could use that as game currency, which is actually something.
Oh, I'm sorry, you only got the gold coins. You need to pay for the platinum coins to be able to unlock the outfits.
Yeah, you need 1,000 gold coins to you can convert it to 1 platinum coin, and then you need 5 platinum coins for that new outfit.
Oh no, the converting of coins for other premium coins is totally looked down upon the gacha industry. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, I feel like you're giving them ideas. This is horrible.
This is not
you need
a good
to
thing.
Stop.
This is not a good look for us.
Yeah. Actually, sometime, Dan, we should probably like talk about these kinds of mechanics and break them down, and you know, see what's what, because you work for a company that uses some of them, and I'm sure there are lines that even you guys won't cross. So, you know, there's probably a good discussion there, so we'll probably have to do that another time.
I'll just have to look for a game that does what we do, but not use the game that we do.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So. All right. What else have we got here? Okay, let's... we have a couple more topics to talk about, but first one is Valve delists 173 games by a single developer.
Games.
Yeah. Valve even called them fake games.
Yeah, basically this was a single developer going under dozens and dozens of different names. Basically posting the same game with some vaguely switched apps in between them.
So it's the Donald Trump of Steam?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so these are basically Unity asset flips, and you know, change a couple things here and there, but not really anything of significance. This guy was just basically flooding the store with them. It was clearly, you know, to fund his Steam trading card farming bot network. So that was lovely. And it just, if you look at the numbers, it's kind of staggering because of those 173 games, 100 of them came out in 1 month.
Rather fast.
Yeah. So so you can tell there's really no effort there. It made up, 1% of the entire Steam catalog was this developer. It might not sound like a lot, but,
quite a damn bit.
Yeah, that's quite a damn bit. And it makes you realize that if this is how far somebody has to go before Valve will actually step in, maybe they have some bigger systematic problems that algorithms are just not going to solve.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that while Steam Direct was an interesting idea, the fact they're not really doing any kind of curation, it actually made the getting on the store easier for these kinds of people. So
time to pack this one in.
Hire some people to do some curation, Valve. I mean, that's really what it's going to boil down to. They don't like paying people, apparently. So
seems like some sort of flag should be flipped when somebody is releasing 100 games in 1 month.
Yeah.
We need to look into this.
50,000 keys for no apparent reason.
Yeah, that's what we expect, but, Speaking of which, the funniest thing that happened, speaking of Valve, when I was at the SNES thing waiting in line, this dude walks up and he's got a Half-Life shirt on. And he's like, I don't know why any gamer would walk up to Best Buy and then be surprised that there was a line on Friday. He's like, well, I guess he was trying to be cool. Like, well, what's this line for? And he's like, it's a Super NES Classic. He's like, oh, what's that? And he goes, don't worry about it. The line's actually for Half-Life 3.
It's never coming out.
He just looked at him like he didn't get that joke either. And he was
Oh, dear.
Magnificent.
Good branding.
It really was. It was Half-Life 3. And he looked kind of confused and then he walked away.
He's wearing the damn shirt. couldn't get it.
Maybe you don't know what that shirt is.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just a fan of the Greek language.
Yeah,
so right.
You know, there are people who think of Metallica as a fashion brand. So yeah, it could be that. So we'll end off with the Atari box. This has been this week's retro community punching bag, apparently. So new details have emerged. We know what the specs are. Sort of know what the specs are. They're claiming a customized AMD CPU with Radeon graphics, which sounds an awful lot like, Xbox One or PlayStation 4. Just saying. We got the price, which, was another point of contention. $249 to $299. That's up there. The other thing they're going to be claiming is Linux-based OS, and the implication is that it's going to be open, which means hackable. But the big problem that everybody seems to be latching onto is the fact that they're going to be crowdfunding this on Indiegogo. That platform doesn't really have the greatest of reputation as far as, shadiness goes. So it makes me wonder if they're actually trying to scam people or whether or not they're just not confident that they're going to be able to fully fund it. I don't know.
Is EZ playable?
What?
Is EZ playable?
Dan Rev asking the important questions.
I would imagine that ET would be playable one way or the other.
Okay, not worth it.
This is why we have the reputation we have. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah.
Sounds like
I don't know.
I'm an Android box.
Well, if, for me, everybody's looking at it as, not worth it, not a retro, not for the retro community. It doesn't really do what they want it to. And for me, I'm thinking like, this is exactly what I want.
I mean, you better put all your emulators and that on it.
Yeah. I want one standalone box with enough horsepower to run everything from Atari 2600 to PlayStation 2 in one package.
Well, that might make it worth it, but then it also depends on what kind of controller I could use.
Anything. It'll use Bluetooth, it'll use USB. You know,
I'm just wondering what the Atari part of this is. Like, are they publishing stuff on it?
Yeah,
are they offering their own storefront?
I'm waiting for Jaguar 2, baby!
They're going to have their own storefront, you know, so they're going to be able to sell their own ROMs onto the platform. I'm sure that's going to be a
Do you think this is where Tempest 4000 turns up?
I'm pretty sure we will see it on here. Whether we see it exclusively on here is another matter, because that's going to depend on, you know, if the thing even comes out. So, you know, they're claiming spring 2018 for it. That's not all that far.
Not at all.
It's like, where are your games if it's out in 6 months?
Yeah, so, you know, where are your games? The implication is, of course, being, you know, that it's an open platform, that people will be able to port Linux games to it. Well, they wouldn't have to port it. They'll just run on it, which means you could install Steam onto it and have a library of your, you know, Linux-compatible games on that. And, of course, if you're... if you're handy with the Linux, you could probably also install a few Wine packages in there as well. Get that, get your Windows stuff working as well. So, you know, for me, this doesn't seem like the kind of platform that is for the retro enthusiast. Yes, they're using the Atari name. Yes, they're using a retro-inspired aesthetic. But I think this is going to be more a console for the tinkerer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an Ouya.
Yeah, it's an Ouya, but potentially done right.
Hey, man. Whatever. They're probably just trying to cash in on the name at that point. It sounds like they don't even know what the fuck this thing is actually supposed to be.
It's, you know, I want to give it the benefit of the doubt, but... You know, you can only benefit the doubt sometimes so much before I have to, like, start writing it off. But, yeah, they really need to start talking about games, especially this close to its alleged release. But, yeah, that's the Atari
box. We knew less about the Switch at this point.
Yeah, we knew less about the Switch about that at this point. Although, if you look at the... Well, I should point out there's a couple of pictures in that article that's linked there, and yeah, it is actually kind of an attractive looking little console.
Look solid, yeah.
It does look nice, and yes, that's actual wood. So they got that going for them.
Well, shit. Is it rich mahogany?
I'm actually, I think one of the things that they're going to be doing is a variety of finishes that you can choose from. So
I need some rich mahogany in my life.
Yeah,
so it looks better than the Infinity Stones and.
Beat the Infinity Easter eggs.
Yeah,
what? So, that would talk about botched. Jesus.
I almost bought that shit too.
Same here. Yeah. I mean, I ordered it. I had it. They Best Buy hit me up. Like, you gonna pick this up? Like, no, I'm good. Let me get my money back.
Oh yeah, that game came out, didn't it?
Game I just backed out of it completely because of the esports video.
Did that rumored esports video actually just torpedo that game?
I sure hope so,
because I don't see very positive buzz about it after having been released. But yeah, anyways,
everyone's saying when's Dragon Ball?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm guessing nobody is really too thrilled about the Atari box. Ah, fair enough.
Well, if it ends up being what you said it would be, maybe that'd be pretty interesting, but it sounds like the biggest problem is nobody knows what it actually should be at this moment, not even Atari.
Yeah. You know? Clear-cut details and clear-cut focus is what they really need right now, and that last email blast that went out didn't have either of those things.
Check it out. We got a box. Its name is Atari. What do you think? You want $300? Where you at?
Yeah.
And
then you have a cartridge slot, so you can't. It's not going to play actual Atari cartridges.
Obviously going for the hard sell here.
Isn't Atari a Hot Topic brand?
No, they're owned by some French company now, so I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, like compared to the Switch, we know what Nintendo is. We don't know what Atari is.
Yeah.
Like what they bring to this other than the name and the branding.
Yeah. Yeah. We just don't know. And we won't know for at the very least another month because they're expecting to have another info blast in about a month. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep following this because I find it fascinating. This will either be something pretty interesting or it will be a colossal train wreck, which is mm-hmm. what most people
well,
are thinking it is.
Realistically, it's probably going to end up being both.
Yeah, we'll see when the Indiegogo campaign goes up, see how quickly it funds or doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, so far it has an easier pronunciation than Super NES Classic, so.
Well, at least somebody said it right on this show.
Hey, I've said Super NES Classic along with every other pronunciation under the sun just because I could.
I know, what an asshole.
But
you took it up a little bit.
It's supposed to be the nice one on this show, Phil, and you're fucking it up.
It's supposed to be the host with the most.
No, that's Brandon.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. We never actually figured out what the most what, but okay, we'll figure that out eventually. But anyways, so I guess we got a show for this week, guys.
Yeah.
It's been fun. We got to talk about the SNES Classic. We got to talk about all kinds of other things.
I'm so proud of you, Phil.
I had to just work that one in there once at least. But anyways. If you like our random ramblings, you can check us out over on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, and your favorite RSS readers. You can also check us out at smashpad.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/smashpadsocial or facebook.com/dayzeroupdate.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I'm Filippo DiNofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
I'm Daniel Victoria.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you next week.